So welcome, everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. I know we do have a children's program today, so I will stop on time. I want to spend a few moments this morning talking about something called retreat. And I'm saying that because in this month, past month of September, I was fortunate to be able to spend a week in a cabin in Colorado Rockies, up around 8,500 feet, staring at a mountains that were between 12 and 14,000 feet, as well as conducted a retreat on composting fear into fearlessness at the Southern Dharma Center, retreat center up north of Asheville, as well as many of our members and friends were at a retreat given by the monks and nuns of the Thich Nhat Hanh Plum Village community at their practice center in Magnolia Grove in Mississippi. And hopefully we'll have a few moments for a few people at least from who attended the retreats to talk a little bit about their experience so we all can share it and have a deeper understanding. But I would say, so I wanted to talk about retreat. Some of you here, that may seem light years away, just coming and sitting in an hour of meditation may seem like the biggest retreat you could undertake at this moment, or doing 15 or 20 minutes on your own every day may seem like a big step. And others of you, the idea of retreat is something you are familiar with. But I think it's something we all have to become familiar with for our own mental health and sanity these days. Going back to the time of the Buddha, when his community surrounding him was an itinerant community, they didn't have any buildings during the Buddha's lifetime. Well, toward the end of his lifetime, they began to have a little bit. But basically, they were itinerant. They wandered about. They had no possessions, and they were totally dependent on the lay community. It was a very interesting relationship that the monastic community had then. Not growing food of their own, having no cooking utensils, having no sustenance of their own. They were allowed to have money or any kind of thing. They were totally dependent on the lay community, and so every day they would they would go into whatever town or village they were close by and ask for food. So obviously, when that's your relationship, it's a relationship you cultivate for many reasons. And so that traditional cultivation of a monastic community and a lay community that is supporting them on a daily basis, very personally, was quite wonderful. But even in those times, when their life was very simple and they lived away often from worldly activity, at least 3 months every year, especially in the rainy season, when it was difficult to travel around in India, they would close down wherever they were. They would just stop and go on retreat. Going on retreat really meant all you were doing was cultivating, practicing, getting teachings and practicing. And over the course of the 2,600 years of Buddhism, retreat, stepping back from, has really been an essential part of those who want to practice, let's say, Buddhism, not as an ism, something to believe or simply worship or devote to, but as as it was taught by the Buddha, which means it was a path to live, right? Something to practice. And so especially for those who are seeking the Buddhist teachings and the meditative practices of Buddhism as a path of their own inner healing and transformation, I think retreat, especially in these days, is essential. And I would say there are many ways that one could do it. So the idea of retreat is the idea of retreating from. Right? You're stepping back from. It's also sort of a military term, isn't it? when one force retreats, they what? They go back. They step back. They're no longer engaged in combat, so to speak. And I think that's a good, an apt term, because many people in their daily life seem to have a lot of the attributions in their daily life of what people usually used to think about a combat. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's dangerous out there. Or it's stressful out there. Or you got to keep your wits about you all the time, or you, something bad will happen. You know what I'm saying? So there's even a sense in our time that many people kind of right approach their everyday life like they're going off to war every morning. You know, and at night they're coming home sort of exhausted or worn out. People talk about it from the battles of the day, right? The combats of the day. So retreat is this sense of being able to step back from, right? Thich Nhat Hanh uses the word for what traditionally is called in Sanskrit in Buddhist meditation, samatha. It's usually translated as calm abiding, meditation, mental tranquility. He quite simply calls it stopping. which is probably the first step in healing and transformation. To see what's going on, we have to stop, right? Because when we are lost in the world of activity, lost in the world of action, we often lose our perspective. Isn't that there's no clarity? We can't tell what's real from what's not real. What's really going on, and what our projections or our thought, mental projections or our thought about what's going on, you know, what's really going on? It's sort of like, you know, if you get all your information about the world from the news, and especially what your source of news is, you know, you might think you're getting an accurate picture of what's going on in the world, right? But the truth is, every day there are millions of things going on in the world, all over the world. And somebody at these little newspapers or whatever there are kind of deciding what? Which of the millions or of events, and maybe which of the thousands of important, significant events, you know, that are going on in the world, and the hundreds of thousands of events that are going on in our country, which ones they want to what? Tell us about. So right away, when we're getting our morning news, we are getting a very distorted picture of what's really going on in the world in the last 24 hours. Is that clear? I mean, we think we're getting the news, but we're getting somebody's picking and choosing of what they think is significant. So that's number one. There is that picking and choosing. And number two, there is what's called spin. I mean, a lot of times we're getting somebody's ideas about, right? And even in how they present the even how they present the so-called facts of a situation, we may not be getting the facts. Is that clear? So many of us know that. If you don't know that, you think the way the world you're getting through your media is really the what's going on in the world. Now, many of us don't realize that that is also what's happening in our own minds. All day long, we are having one experience after the other, right? Every moment's another experience, right? Now, what we deem important, what we deem unimportant, is all within, you know, that's what we're doing, right? Reality is just unfolding, moment to moment, situation to situation. That's all that's really happening, right? But the way we are grabbing onto this one, obsessing about that one, ruminating about that one, thinking that's important, that's unimportant, that is all what? Our own projection. And the same way many people who think about their past. I mean, does anybody here really think they remember every moment of their past? right? Does everybody even really think they even remember 1% of every moment of their past? No. So the truth is, just from the beginning, we are getting every time we think about the past, we're not getting an accurate picture of our past, right? As well as we have valued or undervalued our experiences, right? There are some experiences that might have happened 20, 30, 40 years ago that still are like gigantic in our minds, right? And other experiences, we don't even remember. So not only is there that factual distortion of our past, but then the spin we give is also, and we think that's real, but that's distorted. Can you see that? In the same way, the future is totally unknown, right? Everybody, actually, I just on retreat, and this was an interesting retreat up at Southern Dharma, because usually the retreats up there are primarily filled by people from our community. So they make the journey up there. We have people up in North Carolina. But this retreat, because we're doing a retreat later in October, and also because a lot of our people were at Magnolia Grove, probably there were more kind of non-members of our community than members, a lot of new people. And I realized that things are kind of, like this is the present, and the past is not real and the future is not real. People kind of look at me like, what? And it really took a couple of days to get everybody on board with that. And it just reminded me, how distorted I can become, thinking, isn't it obvious? There's only this moment. This is what's only real. Anything that happened prior to this moment is just complete mental fabrication. And anything that we think can happen after this moment is just fantasy. I came to realize that not everybody sees it that way. So that was very good for me to be reminded. So even the way we might imagine our future to be, right? For many people, again, it is, we're not imagining everything event. We're just picking out certain things and we're obsessing. So again, we don't realize just the same way when we get the information from the news, the newspapers, the blogs, whatever you're accessing, that is completely distorted. Right, people are just, we're getting very few of the facts of really what's going on in the world, and most of that has some kind of spin to it, that our minds are doing the same thing. Our minds are doing the same thing. So therefore, to be able to see clearly what's going on, either in the world, within myself, what's real, what's not real, what's imagined, what's fantasy, what's true, what's untrue, there has to be a stopping, right? And a settling down. Or it is impossible. As it is often said when we talk about this kind of meditation of stopping, the example, and you're probably familiar with it, the example is, if you walk into the water of a lake and you're walking about, it gets murky, right? You can't see what's in the water. You can't see your feet, right? If you want to see clearly what's in the water, you can't keep walking around. See, children don't know that, right? They keep walking around and wondering why the water is murky. But we learn that if we just stop and stand still, right, the sediment will settle down. Again, why do we want the sediment to settle down? So we can see clearly what's in the water. So there has to be that stopping. Is that clear? Now, that has always been true when one wants to really unpack, look deeply into the very source of why I suffer. What are the causes that create happiness? Why is my heart closed? How do I open my heart? All the various questions that deal with people who look to themselves, right? As long as the mind is continuing to race down its continual patterns, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to really develop any significant change or transformation, because it's just too much going on, and we don't see clearly, right? Not only do we not see clearly the external world, what's going on, because that's distorted, but we certainly don't see ourselves clearly, right? Because of ego distortion and lots of things we won't get into today. So, in addition to the historical role that retreat, and I'll talk about specifically what that's about, has played in the meditative, introspective, healing, transformation traditions, today, ordinary people, I'm calling us ordinary people, the pace of life, the amount of information, you know, again, ordinary people, not just people working in data processing, or you know, ordinary people, because of electronics, have the ability to be processing information all day long, right? From the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed, we are endlessly processing information, right? No longer is it coming just by human interaction or interaction with the kind of natural life. For most people these days, it is more and more a matter of electronics, right? And that information, that constant load of information, whether it's the internet or cruising or Googling, or whether it's texting or messaging, or whether it's whatever it is, right? Whether it's watching TV and watching movies and streaming or games. Right? See, I didn't even know that everybody was playing games. You know, I thought people at least were conducting business or something, you know. And then every now and then, you know, I'll fly somewhere and you walk up and down the aisle and you sort of go people and you sort of see, and you see most people are doing what? They're playing games. I didn't know that. So again, you know, it's this. So I think what is happening to us is that we are being habituated. And the stronger word could be addicted to this kind of stimulation, right? And when the stimulation is withdrawn, like any good addict, we feel something's missing. It's not even always conscious, right? It's just kind of a little bit of almost unconscious ill at ease, right? Which immediately, unconsciously, often just makes people do what? Go to their computer, check their iPhone, right? You know, do something. And they don't realize, because doing nothing, quote unquote, and let me just say, to me, doing nothing is being alive, but doing nothing, which really for most people means nothing stimulating me, is an uncomfortable, it feels uncomfortable. But because we continually and so easily, right, unthinkingly, can easily get stimulation, right, we don't know what's going on, right? Now, an addict will know what's going on. An alcoholic will know what's going on when they don't get their substance. Because when a period of time goes by, and depends on the level of their addiction, when the time goes by and they don't get their substance, they begin to feel what? Yeah, well, which is that you feel is something's wrong. I feel uncomfortable, right? They feel uncomfortable, right? And that usually propels them into what? Getting something, getting their substance, because if there's one thing that we don't like in this society is what? to feel uncomfortable, right? I mean, we'll almost do anything else. You know, addicts will go out and rob, and lie, and cheat, and do everything, rather than what? Feel uncomfortable in their mind, in their body, okay? But we have to realize that I think in the nature of our society and its stimulation and its busyness, and I could go on and on and on if I was a sociologist or somebody, but I won't. But I think as people who are interested in meditation, in mindfulness, in learning how that have come to the realization that it's not the world, but is me, that primarily in the beginning has to be transformed. It's the way, it's my own uncomfortability being in myself. It's my own mind that's out of control. It's my own mind that's not happy. It's not peaceful. It's not open. It's not relaxed. It's my own heart that's closed off. That people who understand that we have to begin here, right, we have to begin the process of stopping. Meditation, mindfulness, concentration, insight, meditation is that process where the inner can be transformed. So our activity in the so-called outer world is coming from a very different place, and we can relate to it in a very different way. So, retreat. We have to be able to step back from. And we have to be able to step back long enough that things quiet and calm down inside, and we can actually see, feel, experience what is really going on within me and what is really going on in the external world. Now, what does that look like? Well, for many people, that may look like on a daily basis, daily meditation. You know, you turn off the phone, you turn off the stimulation, you wait a computer, you find a space within your house, and you just stop, no matter how it feels. Right? Many people don't like to meditate, especially in the beginning, because why? It doesn't feel good yet. Right, I'm still agitated. I'm still this. I have to face what's going on in my mind. I have to feel things I don't want to feel. Right. So for some people, especially in the early days, the process of stopping isn't necessarily, you know, bliss. Right. And many of us, again, we're looking for bliss. We're looking to get away from ourselves. We're looking to escape. Right. And so Buddhism, especially a practice like mindfulness, because there are meditation practices, the focus is to bliss out, to imagine things, colors, imagine you're traveling to astral realms and you're meeting astral beings and you're just, you know. Again, that's there are many meditation practices and traditions that cultivate that. But Buddhist meditation doesn't. Okay? Right? Because the basis of Buddhist meditation, the Zen and the great perfection traditions is everything is fine right now. You are a Buddha right now. Your enlightened nature is right here. It's just covered. And the job is to uncover it. Okay? So to uncover it means we have to be willing to be present to what is covering it. Right? And so, you know, we got to stop. And we have to stop and sit and not move and begin to develop a relationship with what's going on inside us. A relationship that sees clearly what's really going on within my heart and mind and body. And secondly, learning how to work skillfully, intelligently, wisely, mindfully, with that stuff, right? And again, our daily mindfulness, our daily meditation is a retreat from, okay, that world that we are so caught up in, right? That we are so addicted to, that we are so tossed about by, this way and that way, up and down, where things are going well, we're happy. Things aren't going well, we're unhappy. Things are calm out there and we're at peace. Things are a little agitated out there and we're all riled up. I mean, that's just the way, you know, that's the way it's going. So we need to develop a different way of being in the world, and that comes from this stopping. Again, coming to Sangha for an hour or two, once a week, twice a week, three times a week, is another way of what? I mean, we're all here, aren't we? So we're not out there. So this is another kind of retreat. You know, it's a little maybe longer than most people do on a daily basis. But if used effectively, it is a time both to step back and cultivate mindfulness and stopping, but it is also by spending a little more time in calmness and clarity, and this is very psychologically important, it gives us a vantage point for looking at who? At us. And kind of seeing, you know, what's going on in your life, and what's really going on inside you, what you're really feeling and thinking, you know, and having some objectivity, having some space. You see, you need that space when your face is right in it, and most people's face is right in it. They just get up and they're off and running every day, right? Most people get up and what do they do? What do they do? What? They turn something on. Got to get something on. Got to check my email, got to check the computer, got to turn on the morning show. You know, I got to get something going here, right? There's no time to come into the world with any kind of self-awareness, with any kind of presence, with any kind of ground, right? It's just off and running all day. And at the end of the day, what do?
Check their email.
Check their email again. Let's keep it going, right? You know, there's no return home. Thich Nhat said, there's no returning home. So there's got to be that retreat. And again, that retreat is a meditative retreat. But also outside of even that, it's a time for self-awareness, self-reflection, for just stopping and looking at your life. Right? Now, again, for this is why longer retreats. That's why we have here days of mindfulness. We have formal 3, 4, 5, 7 day retreats. But just even for people who aren't, you know, involved in a meditative path, just that willingness to stop, to be alone, and to step back from one's life, you know, and ask yourself some of the deeper questions. Am I happy? Right? Am I happy? How do I really feel about my life? What am I really like during the day? What's the truth about what's going on in my mind and in my heart and my emotions during the day, right? Am I on the right track in my life, right? You know, people do these exercises, you know, where like, what are the most important things in your life, right? You know? And people, you know, what are the most important, meaningful things in your life? And people make these wonderful lists, right? And then you ask them, all right, now actually log your day and the time you spend, right? So one would think that those things that are most important, most significant, most meaningful, give you the greatest happiness would be the things you'd be putting as much effort as and time into, right? And what do you find? No. You often find that things that are most people say is most meaningful to them is at the bottom of the list in terms of how they're actually spending their time in life. Everybody know what I'm talking about? There may be people like that in this room. You know, how do you get that if you don't stop? Right? And if you don't stop and let things settle down and begin to look more deeply into your own life, into the way you're spending it, your time, your mind, your heart, the way you relate, the relationships. So again, retreat. You know, let's say you want to work on yourself. Now, many people like to work on themselves. Is that true? Probably here we have a lot of professionals who work on themselves, work on their issues. Now, why is it that many people have been working on their issues for years and years and years? Because oftentimes we have not really stopped, stepped back, and in a very concentrated way, worked on the issue, right? So oftentimes it is when you're on retreat for 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, 30 days, whatever, that in a very more concentrated, consistent way, we can devote our energy to really understanding, working through. Is that clear? And that takes a certain amount of energy, a certain level of consistency and diligence to kind of break through a lot of these knots that have tied us historically. So oftentimes we're always chipping away at. You see, when we say we're working on our issues, we're just chipping. Little chip, little chip, little chip, stop, grows back, chip, chip, little chip, stop, grows back. You know, years go by like that. Decades go by like that. And we wonder why. Again, it's because we haven't stopped, retreated, and created the environment that would allow us, right, to really break through, to break out of. And that is why, you know, again, in the Buddhist meditations, which are like, you know, I mean, in a certain sense, we're sort of, in a certain way, amateurs. You know, these are the people who devote their lives to it. You know, retreat is just part of their life, right? Every year, 3 months, 6 months, go on retreat. Oh, you want to develop your real insight and understanding? Oh, go on a 3-year or 6-year retreat. I mean, that's the way traditionally people would do that. We don't, we're lay people and we have responsibilities, families, etc. So we have to be a lot more conscious about understanding this need that we have for stopping, for retreating, for stepping back. Again, this is not a retreat like a defeat. Let me get that clear. This is not a defeat. This is intelligence. Right? It's like, I don't want to be in this combat anymore. I'm retreating. Actually, there's a saying in the Bodhisattva path, give victory to others. You know, if they want to fight like this, let them have it. Right? I'm retreating because I have more important things to do than engage in life in this basically unfulfilling way. So that's a little bit about retreat. There are all kinds of retreats, personal retreats, group retreats, different kinds of retreats of all types. So just because you see the word retreat on it doesn't mean it's really the retreat you want or need. So always look at the content. Traditionally, in the Zen tradition, a group retreat, now I'm not talking about solitary group, a group retreat, has three main ingredients. First ingredient is emphasis on meditation, introspective practice. Secondly, there is usually the presence of Dharma. Someone is teaching. Someone is sharing the teachings and the practices. So one understands what one's doing in the meditation. And thirdly, and most importantly, is there is a consultation with the teacher in a retreat. So you know that what you're doing, you're practicing correctly. I mean, how do you know it? If anybody is capable of deluding themselves, it's us, about where we're on and what's really going on. So the idea of having a teacher there to hold up a mirror, so just perhaps the teacher sees more clearly than we do, hopefully, someone who is experienced so they can guide us. So that's usually the third essential part of a retreat. So we have 15 minutes. Right, the kids come out at 15 minutes. Brian, you went to the Magnolia Grove retreat. Angie, I know you went to the Southern Dharma. So maybe could you give like a 5-minute, just talk about your experience there, what went on? Okay, and then maybe we'll have a few minutes for questions. So you want to come up and maybe sit up here, and can they use the microphone? Maybe just sit up on the dais.
So perhaps I'll start. Can you hear me? So I was at the Southern Dharma Retreat, which is a little more traditional for our community and a little bit more aligned with what Fred was just describing. This is a retreat that's typically 5 to 7 days. And as Fred was saying, normally it's a group of students who've practiced with him. It's always a very magical journey. And I think those of us who have been with Fred as a teacher, we sort of open up automatically on retreat and go along for the ride. This was interesting because about half the people at the retreat didn't really know who Fred was. And there was, the first couple of days, quite a bit of that propulsion that people have, that momentum that I'm at a retreat, I'm here because of fear, and I want the answer now. And so I think we all know better that that's not how Fred teaches us. And so the first day of the 5-day retreat, Fred had us simply, he didn't even talk about fear, which really you could tell was agitating some people. We had small groups every day, and I facilitated. So I saw this develop over the 5 days. It was quite interesting. So the first day we did just establish ourselves in mindfulness and the clarity of water so that we could see to do the insight work of retreat. So people stayed with the program, although there was some resistance. And then the second day, again, rather than really jumping into fear, Fred talked about really right view and impermanence, the suffering of worldly life, and cause and effect. And again, you could tell there was this momentum of energy of let's get on with it. But Fred was really stressing how important it is when we begin to look at our fears that we begin to understand what underlies the fears, this right view. So again, I could feel in the groups that people, there was some impatience, but again, people were open and were listening. The third day, we really began to get into the fear. And again, it's very much a stopping and not a, this is the problem I have, but a questioning. And people went through a series of guided meditations saying, what is my fear superficially? What would happen then? You know, what if I froze up when I was speaking publicly? What if people thought I was a poor speaker? What if I was humiliated? What if nobody liked me? What if, what if, what if? And we did that type of really deep questioning. It was a very profound session. I mean, people were, you know, visibly moved. There was some crying. People, I think a lot of us had really never looked deeply at what is it we're truly deeply afraid of. And then Fred masterfully began to bring it all back together again, where we looked at, you know, what is it that I'm afraid of? And then if I go back and look at those, at impermanence, at suffering, at cause and effect, where is there a misalignment? Because all of it came back to there's something I don't get in my view. And it was very interesting to me because we recite, impermanence. We recite the 5 remembrances. We do all of this, but we don't do it at a deep level. And so retreat gives you the opportunity to, almost like restorative yoga, you reach over to stretch your back, but rather than doing it for 5 seconds, the longer you stretch, the more the muscles deeply relax, as Becky and Evelyn and others know. And on retreat, you do that. You're looking at this very deeply, and it becomes very clear. And by the 5th day, people are seeing, oh, the what I need to be working with is really deeply realizing impermanence. That's at the root of my fear. So very profound, as all of these retreats have been, a very wonderful experience. And I think everyone left the retreat feeling like it was very magical, and they had really realized some very important things that were going to be very transformative. So thank you.
So I went to Magnolia Grove Monastery in Mississippi, which is about a 12-hour drive from here. And this was a very different retreat than any of the retreats I've ever been on, because I've always been on retreats in this community, similar to what Angie described, usually about 20 to 30 people or alone, and there were about 230 people on this retreat. Although I will say the meditation hall was so big, and there was enough room to, I pitched a tent and there was kind of enough spacing out. It didn't feel like you were mobbed by people. So there was a bit of the feeling of being away from things. But another big difference is that our retreats in our community are silent, except for the deep sharing part. And this retreat was not silent, except for a few parts. So it was interesting, because when there was the silence, in a certain way, it became pretty profound, because you go from not talking and then everybody's not talking. And so it was an interesting, different way to experience what we call noble silence within the retreat setting. And also different at this retreat, it was put on by the monastics within the Plum Village tradition, like Fred was saying. So that was one big difference, is you had the monastics around, which was actually quite wonderful, because, and this dawned on me towards the end of the retreat, they really set the tone for everybody there. Who do you watch? The monastics. And how are the monastics? Mindful. So it was pretty easy. It was pretty easy to fall in line. And everybody did their best, at least, to seem like they were falling in line. So for those who were falling in line, it set the right, you know, you had the right atmosphere, I felt. The other big difference is our retreats in this community are very much around meditation. This retreat, there was meditation, but the emphasis was more on bringing mindfulness throughout the entire day. So we woke up and we would do a 30-minute guided meditation, and they did some of the guided meditation based off of one of the sutras, the Anapanasati Sutra, the Sutra of the Full Awareness of the Breath, and that is also what went into the teachings. So they would do a little guided meditation, really about coming into the body and being aware of the breath in the morning, and then in the evening we would also have a meditation. And I was in a group that had some other things to do, so it's hard for me to remember the actual program of everybody else in the evening. But so in addition to these meditations, we would do like an hour-long walking meditation outside, or an hour and a half-long deep relaxation, which usually was an hour and a half nap for for most of us. And then there would be a Dharma talk about an hour and a half, which the monastics were really quite eloquent. And they talked about dealing with suffering using the sutra that I mentioned earlier in conjunction with some of the other teachings. It's very different also because they put it up on they have a board and they write it all out and they prepare a bit. But I felt connected, like, oh, we're hearing the next generation of Thich Nhat Hanh's students, and they really did a wonderful job. So there was Dharma and there was meditation, like Fred was mentioning in our retreats, but it was really a different feel for me, because on our retreats, it feels like we're getting these teachings and we're learning how to apply them in our meditation. In this retreat, it felt more like we're getting a little bit of the teachings and they're sinking in a little bit, and we are doing a little meditation, but it was really about mindfulness is really what I felt, and learning to be present, learning to relax, learning to, you know, be able to just be with other people. So it's interesting, in a certain way, this was really a retreat for me, from any expectation of what a retreat is, from any idea of, oh, I want to accomplish this in my meditation, or I want to do that, and really just be with people and myself and see what goes on. And actually, some stuff went on. I learned quite a bit about myself. And so, you know, all these different retreats we do, there's so many different types. I'm finding they really, they're all wonderful. And they, like Fred was saying, there's different types and different contexts. But they're all beneficial in different ways. I don't know if I have much more to add. Another big part of the retreat that I like was mindful eating. The food was incredible. But also, people were really quiet, and the bell would ring every 15 minutes. And it's just a whole nother way to be. I really see the how the monastics, I mean, they've really just cultivated this way of being that is just so relaxed and gentle. And just like Fred was saying, although there was talking and actually some people were checking their phones and computers, it was really just a retreat from that lifestyle, learning just to be present. Like, you know, what am I going to, there's, you have time in between. So it's like, what am I going to do? Oh, I'll go just drink a cup of tea or relax, or even maybe have a conversation with this new person. So it was kind of in that way, it set like a model of how to live your daily life. Although we all don't get an hour and a half nap every day, but so thank you.
So we have about 5 minutes. Are there any questions anybody wants to have for Angie or Brian or myself about retreats and what was shared today? Please don't be shy. Yes. Thank you. So for the camera, somebody was sharing their experience from 2 years ago at Magnolia Grove and being on retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh and the monastics. Good. Any other questions about retreat, the formal retreats that were shared up here, but also the whole idea of stopping and going on retreat and the necessity of it in each of our lives, that we build that in, and we have to build that in consciously. Because left to our own devices, which is usually our habit energy, the past will continue unabated. So there has to be this stopping. Good. Good. Then thank you, too.